Hello and welcome to another edition of Popcorn Optional, a weekly movie podcast. And this week we will be reviewing War for the Planet of the Apes. We have some D23, the Disney biannual Comic Con-esque convention to get to, some news from there. We're going to debut a new segment, and then we will get into our review of the movie, and we will end the night with our content of the week. I am Cameron Salina, and tonight I am joined by my co-hosts Jake Brown and Trevor Allison. Hey guys.
What's up?
Heyo, it's good to be back. Missed you guys.
Missed having you, bud. Hey, well, so we talked about this. Did you have a chance to see Spider-Man?
I did not have a chance to see it yet. I'll try to see it this week and have a quick mini review next week, hopefully.
Yeah. I think that's going to be a Trevor movie that I'm curious to get your opinion on, because I think that's kind of, as far as superhero movies go, I think that's the closest Trevor superhero movie I've seen.
Awesome.
But yeah, let's go ahead and we got a bunch to get to. Let's go right into D23. D23 is Disney's annual or biannual, they have it every other summer, convention where they get into all things Disney. They do animation, they do TV, they do movies. There was a bunch of big stuff coming from the park side of things, like how they're going to have a fully interactive Star Wars hotel for Disney. Where they give you like clothes to wear as you're in the hotel, and as you go to the park, like whatever you do at the park follows you back. Like if you go on like the Millennium Falcon simulator and you do really good, then you have people coming up to you asking you to like shuttle you to them to places and stuff like that.
Oh, that's so creepy.
It's so creepy and so awesome.
I mean, I'm willing to pay a pretty penny for that kind of experience. But yeah, D23. So we're mainly going to be talking about movie news. And the first thing, perfect segue, Star Wars. Star Wars didn't debut any new footage in way of a trailer, but they did debut a behind-the-scenes footage reel. That was pretty awesome. Jake, how did you feel about this behind-the-scenes reel?
Oh, man. This was one of those things that when it popped up, like on YouTube or randomly on Facebook, I immediately was like clicking that so hard. And I loved it. I mean, I think that's really all you need to show to sell a film like this that already has so much hype behind it, especially with a property like Star Wars. And they just really make you feel the feels with these things. Whoever edits these things and shoots these things does an incredible job, because it's just awesome. It's so inspiring, so well done, and I'm super excited for the film. I don't need any more marketing materials. I'm in.
That Carrie Fisher little button at the end of it of "it's all about family," I was just like, oh crap. I saw 2 seconds of her and I'm already crying. Like what am I gonna do the whole movie?
Yeah.
Oh man. All right, Trevor, did you get a chance to watch the behind the scenes?
Yeah, I did. I was going to say the key part there, and why this kind of thing works so well, why Star Wars works so well is like what our dearly departed Carrie Fisher said, that it's all about family. And I think that a lot of that comes to, I don't know if it's the way that Lucasfilm or Kathleen Kennedy kind of runs things, that it's kind of the feel they put out there, the environment they put out there. And Star Wars is something where, I mean, even in the bad films, the actors believed in what they were doing. And that's something that Lucas and Lucasfilm and whoever else has been in charge has always been able to do. And that's a part of what makes Star Wars so great. As far as seeing this makes me even more excited. Like Jake said, I don't need to see any other marketing. I might like tear down a poster if I see it. I don't want any spoilers. I don't want to know anything else, especially after I hear John Boyega and Daisy Ridley telling me that Rian Johnson, who's kind of a genius anyway, has done this whole completely new thing that's going to be surprising, but is still Star Wars, and Mark Hamill telling you how awesome it is. Like it's like overload. I'm ready.
I'm with you.
My body is ready.
December can't come soon enough. Yeah, the behind the scenes was fun. I think Trevor, you hit on the nail on the head, and I think even the cast realizes how special this is. Like you watch that behind the scenes and you're like, they really like truly care about this series, and you know, whatever comes out on screen, you know, you're pretty on board with it because you already know that they're taking this seriously and that it's not, you know, George Lucas just throwing things out there just to have prequels. But it's people who legitimately care about the characters and who care about the story. I think that's pretty exciting. That's why, I mean, there's a lot of reasons I'm pumped for it, but yeah, the footage looked great. I'm really, really excited. There are so many people that have mentioned the like whole, don't watch trailers for this movie. Like cast members have even said like, don't watch anything for this movie, like go in blind. Like, is it feasibly possible for Disney to be like, look, we're just going to release a poster and we're not going to release any other marketing? Like,
it would be a total boss move to not market this movie anymore at all. Just be slap things that say December 15th on walls everywhere, and that's it.
They released a 2.5-minute trailer where it's just like Star Wars The Last Jedi, December 15th, and that's it. Like nothing else, just like music and that.
That is better than the Daddy's Home 2 trailer.
No, I mean, come on. Marky Mark doing comedy is pretty great. I think we can all admit that The Other Guys is a highlight. But yeah, okay, so that's Star Wars. The other big thing is Avengers Infinity War coming out next May, and they released footage with Thanos, with Guardians, with Thor. You can pretty much go anywhere online and just type in Avengers Infinity War D23 footage description, and you can read what the footage was. But guys, where are you at with your excitement for the first culmination of the MCU that will later be finalized in Avengers 4? But where are you guys at with this? Are you guys excited?
I'm pumped. I mean, I love the Marvel films, and I'm finally, it's like we're finally getting what was promised like 15 years ago with that Avengers teaser scene.
15 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, I know that's not, it feels like that long, man. I mean, it's been teased for so long.
If I told you that it was 5 years ago, what would you say?
I mean, I guess I would believe you because they're cranking these things out at such a ridiculous pace. But I'm excited to see some footage. Apparently, in the footage they showed, Thanos threw a planet at the Avengers. So yeah. I mean, that sounds pretty awesome. So
that sounds pretty comic booky. Like
yeah. Like next level stuff. So I'm pumped.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Where you at? The first thing we need to talk about are how big Josh Brolin's arms are. Because
dude, he looks
shocking.
Huge.
That is.
We should mention that he's also going to be Cable in Deadpool 2, who is a physically massive character as well. So, I mean, between these two movies, he's Dwayne The Rock Johnson schedule.
He's also like 50 years old, so seeing someone that's 50 years old with those kind of arms is pretty terrifying. But yeah, that teaser, I mean, definitely got me excited. The footage is going to be cool, I guess, to see, but I don't really need to see it. I kind of, the same way as the Star Wars thing, the way everyone was talking about this, like, I don't want to know anything else about this. I just want to go in completely blind. I'll probably intentionally avoid the trailers even for the next year or however long it's going to be, and which is going to be nearly impossible, but I don't need it. I'm just ready for the film.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I think it'll be, there's talks of there being a 30 Avenger battle sequence where there's 30 Avengers battling Thanos and his minions. And yes, I do mean minions from Despicable Me. but you know, I think there's a lot to be excited about with this movie. And I think I will go ahead and say this. If at least one major Avengers character doesn't die in this movie, and that sounds really like,
oh, they're definitely killing somebody.
Morbid of me. But like they have to, like they've been saving it for so long. Nobody that's a major character has died. In the first movie they had Bucky, but then it was like you barred him back. Okay, that's kind of a cop out.
I think the odds on favorites have to be Captain America or Iron Man.
Supposedly Cap has a beard in this trailer.
What?
Mm. Yeah. I don't hate Chris Evans with a beard.
Have you seen Snowpiercer?
I have, yes.
Yeah. Very good.
Yeah. Very good. Yeah, I'm with you, Trevor. I would say that the odds-on favorite has got to be Iron Man or Captain America, with me leaning towards Captain America. Because for some reason, I feel like Robert Downey Jr. is going to do these things until he's 90. and I feel like Marvel would pay him for
making like 30 mil a piece or whatever he is.
He made 60 mil for Avengers.
Good Lord.
Oh my God.
That's genius. Like, oh, how do you get that contract?
He's got a great agent.
All right. Let's go ahead and move on to A Wrinkle in Time trailer. Now, I read this book when I was in elementary school, and to me, it seemed like an unadaptable book, in that there's so many really weird out there elements that I was curious how they would transfer from book to screen. But I think this trailer nails a lot of aspects of the book as I remember it. And I think the cast is insane. I mean, you have Oprah, Mindy Kaling, Reese Witherspoon. You have Chris Pine in it, Zach Galifianakis. And then you have Ava DuVernay behind the camera. And that combo is just pretty amazing. Like, what's your guys' background with this? Have you guys read the books? Trevor, where are you at with this?
Yeah, I read the book in like elementary or middle school. And I also read it again a couple years ago. I think like my sister had been talking about reading it or something, and we happened to have it on the shelf, so I read it. You know, it's a real quick, short read, and it's a great book. It's sort of a genre unto itself, in kind of this mystical meets sci-fi kind of thing. And I found a couple articles this week that I haven't had a chance to read about how the influence that it's had on a lot of sci-fi since then, because the book was written in the early 60s. But mm-hmm. this trailer is amazing. This is one of the best trailers I think I've ever seen. It draws you in. It shows you the world. The music that goes with it, that cover of Sweet Dreams with that familiar.
Never
that
did
familiar
I think
lip.
I'd be excited to hear a cover of Sweet Dreams in a trailer. But it works here.
It's so good. I'm super excited about this. We've talked about this, but Chris Pine is on fire right now. He looks amazing in the trailer. Oprah is a fantastic actress. She doesn't act a lot, but she's great. I'm all in on her, Reese Witherspoon, and Mindy Kaling being the three W's. That's awesome. I'm super excited about this. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. It looks like it's going to be big and expansive, just like the source material, and I think it's going to work.
Yeah, nice. I agree. I read this book in like maybe fifth grade, I think, but here's the thing. I don't actually remember anything about it, so I feel like I didn't actually read it. Sorry, Mom. But yeah, I mean, I remember being assigned the book. That's I remember that. So I mean, like you guys said, this trailer is fantastic. Everybody involved is seriously like the top notch of talent in Hollywood, and so I'm really excited. This is a great trailer, and like Trevor said, it builds the world, and I'm already bought in.
Yeah. So that kind of wraps up thoughts on A Wrinkle in Time, which should be coming out in March of 2018, March 9th or so to be specific. And then the next thing that we're going to talk about is Toy Story 4, the newest, but it's coming out, it's expected to come out June 21st, 2019. But the big news coming out about this movie, other than the fact that it's mainly going to be a romantic story between Woody and Bo Peep, and it's going to take place 8 years after the events of Toy Story 3. But the big news is that John Lasseter, who directed Toy Story 1 and Toy Story 2, and I believe he directed Toy Story 3, will no longer be directing this fourth movie. Guys, were you shocked when you heard this, or were you kind of on board?
I mean, once I heard his reasoning about having so much to do all the time, being in charge of literally like three different studios and balancing all of that, I'm not necessarily surprised. I'm also not worried. I think, I mean, I think we've done enough for the Pixar has done enough for us to trust them, especially with Toy Story, which is their tentpole franchise in a way that no other studio has, I think. I mean, Toy Story is Pixar, so it's not going to be bad.
Yeah, I don't know. I have very mixed feelings about this because Pixar doesn't seem to have a good track record with directors that aren't from the original Brain Trust. And so that kind of makes me nervous. And also this movie just doesn't need to exist. Like, that's my biggest problem with it.
I do agree with that.
Yeah, I'm just like, we tied it up with such a perfect ending. Like, stop milking this series for cash because you're out of ideas. That's what it seems like with Pixar. And so that makes me really worried. But I mean, it's Pixar, and their only misstep is Cars. So at the same time, I trust them, and they steward this property really well. I had the same feelings about Toy Story 3, and I was very wrong about that. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. John Lasseter didn't direct Toy Story 3, actually. The last film he directed was Cars 2. And ever since then, he's been head of the studio of Disney Animation. So I'm with you guys. Like, if Pixar trusts that Josh Cooley should be able to do this, who's been an assistant director or co-director on previous Pixar films, then, you know, I trust that they're going to do it. And the other thing is that for the longest time, Tom Hanks and Tim Allen had said that they're not going to come back unless the story's right. Creative people behind the process had said they're not going to come back unless the story's right. And so I feel like this is the tentpole series for Pixar. And so every single one of them is like, what, like a 98, 99, 99 on Rotten Tomatoes. Like, they're all beloved. I don't think that Pixar would just throw out a Toy Story 4 that they don't believe will live up to that same expectation.
Yeah.
Right?
Isn't Rashida Jones writing?
Yeah, her and Will McCormick wrote the third one, and they're writing this one also.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Karen Filippelli. It's an office joke for all you guys out there. Nobody. Okay.
We just wanted it to feel like an actual office situation, you know. I was awkwardly smirking at the camera. You just couldn't see it.
Okay, way to go, full gym. But I now understand what it feels like to be Michael Scott.
I was doing the Stanley look.
Alrighty, let's move on to Lion King. Now, what they screened at D23. Okay, so for those of you who don't know, Jon Favreau, who did Jungle Book, the new recent Jungle Book, is making a CGI version of Lion King. And what they premiered at D23 is the opening scene of Lion King, that thing in the savannah, that thing. They did that. Circle of Life. That one. There we go. I could just call it by its name instead of, you know, making an idiot of myself. They premiered that, though, at D23, but the Jon Favreau version. And from what people inside said, they thought that it was a Disney safari that they had gone out and filmed, and that this was just a like teaser for it. And then as it went on, they realized that it was a CGI remake and that it looked that good.
Wow.
They said that there are people like slashfilm.com, as they reported on it, said that there were people literally crying as they watched this because of how beautiful it was. So take from that what you will, but I'm pretty in on this. Like, you have Donald Glover as Simba, Seth Rogen as Pumbaa, Billy Eichner as Timon, James Earl Jones back as Mufasa, John Oliver as Zazu, supposedly Beyonce may be playing Nala, and then you also might have Hugh Jackman playing Scar.
Man, so, that is guys, that's like one of the best ensembles in a long time.
Right? So, Jake, I'm guessing you're in on this movie, right?
Yeah, for some reason, I still haven't seen Jungle Book. It's been in my Netflix queue forever, and I just haven't gotten around to it, but I've heard amazing things, and I love everybody involved in this. And so if it looks great and they do a good job with the source material, I'm super in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Trevor, where are you at with this?
I love The Lion King. It's one of my all-time favorite movies. That voice cast is amazing. I mean, especially thinking about them as voice actors. Very good. I have philosophical issues with these all CGI animal movies. I don't know. I guess it's the new form of animation. I'm just scared by it or something. I don't know. I'm not sure why this needs to exist. I understand making live action movies that have people in them that are animated, but when they're not people based, I don't know. That being said, I'll definitely go see this movie. It's like 100%. But I'm just kind of iffy on the whole concept, if not anything else.
Well, I mean, just keep in mind, we just watched a 2-hour movie about apes and it looked amazing. So
you're right. You're right.
I guess that is a curious thought of, okay, so if all the characters are CGI and the background's going to be CGI, is the whole movie CGI? Or are we going Benedict Cumberbatch Smaug and going to have him rolling around on the ground doing motion capture?
I mean, I was assuming this was not going to be motion capture since most of the characters are four-legged. Also, hopefully...
Oh, have you seen Benedict Cumberbatch play a dragon?
It's ridiculous.
That guy goes all out.
Hopefully, I'm hoping that maybe at least establishing shots or something are going to be actual shot footage from Africa. You know, like, why would we not do that?
I don't know, man. CG, what it's able to do now is absurd. And, you know, I actually would expect them to do some motion capture stuff just for like facial emotion. Also like location, like physical movement is such a big part of the acting performance. And so giving the actors the ability to like move around in space to express themselves can then be translated in CG into the location of the specific character and stuff like that. So I don't know. We'll see what happens, but I'm with you, Trevor, to a certain extent. Like, it's kind of weird because it's The Lion King, you know, it's like one of the best original animated films of all time, like OG animation. And it's weird that they're messing with that, but you know, I guess it's cool.
Oh yeah. I mean, I'm definitely going to see it.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I will say, for those of you guys that watch Lion King, watch Jungle Book, the entire thing was shot on a soundstage in LA. Like, the jungle, like outside of the main character Mowgli, everything was shot on a soundstage. So watch it with that frame in mind and just go in with that. Because
I'll
that's
be able to hear Bob Iger counting the money coming in as I'm doing that.
Yes, you will.
I mean, by 2019, you may not be having Bob Iger anymore because been looking for a replacement for him for a while. I'm going to just kind of do a quick, are we in or are we out, so we can just kind of move on quickly. Guy Ritchie's doing an Aladdin remake with two unknowns, not unknowns, relatively unknowns, playing Aladdin and Jasmine, and Will Smith playing the genie. Are we in or are we out on this? King Arthur, Legend of the Sword plus Aladdin. How do we feel?
If Guy Ritchie hadn't just had directed King Arthur, I would be in, but I'm now very hesitant. And also, I mean, how are you going to redo Robin Williams as the genie? So, yeah. I mean, I'm more out on this one than the others.
Yeah.
I'm Trevor? Intrigued by Guy Ritchie directing this film. It could be a lot of fun in his style. But yeah, the King Arthur makes me hesitant. I'm glad they didn't cast white people in this movie because that seems like something that they would have done.
Thank God. Finally.
I know, right? I think it was really the Gods of Egypt backlash that started getting everyone.
There we go.
But yeah, I think this could be interesting. Hesitant about Will Smith. I mean, we know if Robin Williams was still alive, he would be the genie because he is the genie and one of like the truly great acting performances of all time.
Yeah, I'm with you.
But yeah, iffy.
The other thing to talk about is Tim Burton is doing a live action Dumbo movie.
All I have to say is nope.
I am so out on this, and I swear if Johnny Depp is in this with white face paint, I will throw a tomato at the screen. Like
a literal rotten tomato.
This would be the perfect film for him to do that with.
Like, no, dude, I'm
Johnny
so
Depp
over
is 100% the ringleader in this movie. It's like not even a question.
Yeah,
like,
I'm so
Johnny Depp is
Tim
not
Burton.
Actually cast in this movie as of right now. Right now, Michael Keaton's in it. We have Eva Green in it. Colin Farrell, Danny DeVito, and a couple of other people, but I'm with you guys. I don't think it'll... I'm pretty out on this one.
The thing is that Dumbo isn't really that good anyway.
Yeah.
How dare you?
Sorry.
You bite your tongue, good sir. Okay. There's so many other things we could talk about. Like, I'm just going to run through Disney's lineup really quick of the next 3 years. This year they have Thor Ragnarok, Pixar's Coco, and Star Wars The Last Jedi. Then we get into next year, they have Black Panther, A Wrinkle in Time, Avengers Infinity War, Star Wars Han Solo, Incredibles 2, Ant-Man Wasp, Wreck-It Ralph 2, Nutcracker and the Four Realms, and Mary Poppins Returns. 2019 they have Captain Marvel, Dumbo, a new Disney animation film, Avengers Infinity War Part 2, whatever they're going to call that, Toy Stories 4, Star Wars Episode 9, Lion King, Frozen 2, and Mulan live action. So
they're literally just printing money. Like just printing money.
I'm pretty low-key excited about Mary Poppins Returns. I think that could be good.
Lin-Manuel, Emily Blunt, it's gonna be great. I will say, out of all of those films, there is one, possibly two, depending on what the Disney animation film is, original films. Yeah. Everything else is a sequel or an adaptation.
Coco is the one, right? So. Coco is original.
Coco is the one, and then Disney has a Disney Toon animation untitled for 2019.
That's the studio system that we live in these days.
That it is. Alrighty, but that's all the news from D23. We could go on and talk. We're probably doing a whole episode just reacting to D23 news because there's so much, so many good things. But we have a new segment to debut tonight. That new segment is a segment where we will highlight the films that we feel are criminally underrated. So tonight we are each going to throw out a film that we think is criminally underrated. Let the other co-hosts agree with us, disagree with us, and hopefully you guys will go see these because these are movies that sadly aren't talked about but deserve to be because they are so good but so kind of behind the scenes. So let's go to our picks. Jake, what is your underrated film for the week?
Okay, so this film is actually like really well regarded critically, but I feel like it just doesn't get the attention it deserves and people forget about it a lot when it's actually really, really good. And that film is Minority Report, starring Tom Cruise, by Steven Spielberg. I think it's just because it's Tom Cruise and Steven Spielberg, and they both have just such a catalog of amazingness. People just kind of like forget this movie exists, but this movie is so good.
Yeah, I would agree that that's an underrated film. Yep. I think it's one of Spielberg's best, and I don't think it's even thrown out there. I think it's one of Tom Cruise's best, and I think it's often forgotten. So Jake, yeah, great pick.
It's one of several great films that are based on the works of Philip K. Dick.
Yes.
Oh, what a brilliant
so
man.
Good.
It's like
so good.
Blade Runner, Total Recall, Adjustment Bureau, all Philip K. Dick ideas.
Yeah, that dude's
Paycheck
a genius.
With Ben Affleck. Trevor, what is your criminally underrated film?
My underrated film, and it's kind of hard to get a gauge for this because this is kind of who you know and who you talk to thing, but I have chosen as my underrated film The Goonies. I was a little bit... Explain yourself. It's not spoken of in the same vein as some of the other classic 80s coming of age movies, I think. And while not quite as heavy as some of them, like The Breakfast Club, I think it's equally as good in entertainment value and in fun. Basically, it's like leftover ideas from Indiana Jones with a whole bunch of young kids. And it's just a ton of fun. It has, speaking of Josh Brolin and his guns, it has Josh Brolin doing push-ups all the time at like age 14. It has a very young Sean Astin. It's got Short Round from the second Indiana Jones. It's so much fun. It's just like what you wish you could do when you were a kid. It's a delight. And I think that it should be spoken of in the line of the great 80s movies like Stand By Me, Breakfast Club, St. Elmo's Fire, those kind of things.
I will say I don't think I consider it underrated. I will consider it forgotten. I say it's forgotten.
Okay.
But I think when you bring up the Goonies, people just like love that movie.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah. That's fair.
I think there's a lot of people, especially within people that are maybe more film-centric. If you ask them some of their favorite 80s films, a lot of them would quickly say Goonies. I think it's, especially for a lot of people working in Hollywood today, I think it's a very formative, important film. I love the Goonies. The first time I watched it was only a couple years ago. My wife Same and I for bought me. It at Target. Because it was like $10 on Blu-ray, and we were like, well, yeah, what do we have to lose? And so delighted by it that it's a great film. I'm with Jake. I don't know if it's underrated because I think it is very highly thought of.
Okay.
But yeah, another good film to highlight. Okay. I had a couple of different picks that I was going to throw out, and the one I'm going to go with is the one that for me actually inspired or made me want to do this segment, because it's a film that I absolutely love that is hardly ever talked about, wasn't that well received. I don't even, like, I guess it's a guilty pleasure because it's not that well received. But it's 2008's Speed Racer. Have you guys seen 2008 Speed Racer?
Oh man, I have not seen it since it came out. So yeah,
I saw it soon after it came out, and I just remember thinking it was like really weird and didn't like it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I feel like it's having this weird like renaissance, like where people are recognizing it finally. But yeah, why do you consider it underrated, Cam?
So it's hardly ever talked about, and I don't know why. I think it's because it didn't do that well critically, and I don't think it did that well commercially either. So the biggest person in the cast is either Emile Hirsch or Matthew Fox, depending on what circle you're going to talk to about this film. You know, if you talk to TV-centric people, you'd be like, oh, it's Jack from Lost, or, oh, it's Emile Hirsch, who was the up-and-coming kid from the early 2000s and did some really amazing stuff, like Into the Wild. I feel like nobody talks about it, though, and nobody gives it the credit it deserves. Like, it was one of the first, like, it's very Scott Pilgrim-esque it came out 2 years before it, but it's super bright, super colorful, super comic booky. It's, like, very campy in, like, a Japanese kind of speed racer way that it should be. But it's fun. It's not, I think it's a lot better than people think it is. I don't think it's like Lord of the Rings, Children of Men level of amazing, but I think it's way better than what people think. And I think it's definitely worth people checking out. Because I think in our comic book climate today, it would be a lot more well received.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I would say it's underrated. I'm trying to remember it. I need to rewatch it, but yeah, I think it's a film that if it came out now, people would have really latched onto it. So yeah, I'll say it is underrated.
Yeah, awesome. Well, there we go. Those are our three films. Jake with
Minority Report.
Minority Report. Yep, there we go. Yep. Thank you. Minority Report. Trevor has Goonies, which we all love. We don't know if it's actually underrated or not, because we all feel like it's pretty well rated. And Speed Racer. Forgotten. That's a good way to phrase it. Trevor, but all three of these films, Minority Report, Goonies, Speed Racer, are all films you should go check out if you haven't seen already. That's all we have for now. Trevor has requested to have a minute to talk about the Detroit trailer that played in front of his film. Jake graciously gave him 55 seconds. So Trevor, your 55 seconds start now.
Okay.
Well, hold on. Let me start the stopwatch. Okay. And now.
Wait, have you guys seen this trailer?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. This is one of the most like insane trailers I've ever seen. It was like a super intense movie in 2 minutes. Like they put the whole thing in there. And also, even though it's a true story, I don't know what's going to happen. I'm not very familiar with it. John Boyega looks amazing in it. This just looks amazing. This looks like it's going to be what Crash was supposed to be or wanted to be. Crash, of course, being one of the like worst films to ever win Best Picture, maybe the worst actually. but I think this is going to be a pretty timely film societally. I think it's going to be very important, and it's going to be very. People are going to be very happy with it, or they're going to be very angry about it. And I think it's going to be pretty interesting.
Came in way under time. Way to go, Trevor.
I mean,
that's impressive.
Most of the words that I want to say about it are like not family appropriate. Like it's maybe the most intense trailer I've ever seen.
It's really good. I'm excited about it. And I mean, the director, she has a pretty good body of work. So pretty pumped.
Catherine Bigelow makes like the realest movies.
Yes, Point Break is very, very real. So we should throw that out
okay.
there.
Okay, since The Hurt Locker, Catherine Bigelow makes the realest movies.
Okay, that's fair. Hurt Locker, Catherine Bigelow is the director who directed Hurt Locker and Zero Dark Thirty. And she was attached to a film about, what's his name? The guy who they did Serial Season 2 on. Bo Bergdahl.
Yes.
She was attached to a Bo Bergdahl movie for the longest time that was written by Mark Bull, who wrote Hurt Locker and wrote Zero Dark Thirty. I don't know what's happening with that movie, but this movie is it looks like it's going to be great, and I've heard great things about it. It's got a great cast. John Krasinski is like randomly in it. Will Poulter. And then, like you guys said, John Boyega, Anthony Mackie, Algie Smith, Jacob Lattimore. I think there's a lot of things to be excited about with this movie. So, yeah, I'm excited also for people to finally see John Boyega in a non-Star Wars role. I think outside of Attack the Block, the only other film people would have seen him in is Imperial Dreams on Netflix. I don't think that was widely seen. But yeah, good talk about that, Trev. Way to bring that to our eyes. All right, let's get into our thoughts on War for the Planet of the Apes. And let's first do just a quick 1 minute. What our previous thoughts on Rise of the Planet of the Apes and Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. Jake, what are your thoughts on these first two?
So first off, I don't know how they got the titles so wrong. And I liked how they even tried to cover it up at the beginning of this movie. Like, no, the titles are intentionally like that. But anyways, I really like these movies. The first one is great. It's like this kind of weird coming of age story from the perspective of a chimpanzee. And then I loved the second film. I don't know why, but I just really, really liked it. And I think it came out in a time where there wasn't a lot of good blockbuster films coming out that year. And it was just like such a smart and original take on a blockbuster film. And so, I'm a huge fan of this series and I was super pumped about this film. Trevor, what is your history with the films?
All right. I had never seen either one of these until like 14 days ago. I watched them all pretty quickly on the plane to and from Utah the last couple weeks. They were interesting. I was initially not very interested in them. But yeah, the first one is it's a little slow, but it's a good film that kind of like builds the universe. It's like a it's like a superhero origin story for Caesar, basically.
And it
kind of works to build that. And the second one I thought was really interesting and really compelling, with some even deeper themes than the first one. But these, what stood out for me these first two films is there's almost not even a protagonist and an antagonist, really, because almost everyone in the films is acting rationally based on what's going on around them, which I think adds to the moral complexity and adds to the interest in the originality of the stories. So I thought Dawn was a little bit better than Rise. I will say the naming thing has been going on for a long time. The sequels to the originals were incredibly long as well. So which I think in some way is an homage to the originals, like a lot of the things in these three movies are. I didn't realize that. The other day I read the detailed plot synopsises on Wikipedia of all of the Planet of the Apes films, because I haven't seen any of the old ones. And there's a lot of homage in these films to the originals.
Yeah, especially, I mean, the big one being the Alpha and Omega symbolage in the new film. I've seen the original Charlton Heston Planet of the Apes. Didn't see any of the sequels, but big fan of the Marky Mark Tim Burton Planet of the Apes, which is also a criminally underrated film. I'm being sarcastic, just so that listeners
I was about to be like, what are you talking about?
I was like,
about?
Wait a second.
I was waiting for someone to be like, God, okay, Cam, come on, seriously? Like, we're going to lose a lot of credibility.
Well, just did like an underrated segment, so I didn't want to like hurt your feelings, you know?
if Jake, I give you full permission that if I bring up a movie like that and say that I like it, that you have full permission to call me out on it.
Okay. Cool.
Because you know my love for Fast and the Furious, so normally I'm not ashamed of loving those kind of films.
All right.
But yeah, big fan of Rise of the Planet of the Apes. I feel like Rise of the Planet of the Apes is a good film, but I feel like it's very much a setup so that they could make Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. Like, I feel like Dawn of the Planet of the Apes is the film that they wanted to make. But they're like, okay, we have to make this other film first, and then if this succeeds, then we can get to that. I'm not huge... Like, James Franco's okay, in my opinion. But in this movie, but I think Andy Serkis just elevates this movie to a whole different level, and that really saves this movie. Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, I think, is one of the best blockbuster movies to come out in the past 10 years.
Agreed.
It's like The Empire Strikes Back level of elevating the original with new ideas and inventing, like taking it in a whole different direction. Serkis once again is fabulous, but I think Toby Kebbell, who plays Koba, doesn't get enough credit for how good he is in that movie.
Yep.
Agreed.
He's terrifying as a villain. And once again, like, Gary Oldman's in this movie and is arguably like the fourth on the totem of great people in this movie, which is just insane. That
I thought
Gary
Jason
just
Clarke
keeps playing.
Was fantastic in it.
Yeah, everybody in that film is so good. That's such a good movie.
Yeah, it's so good. The relationships they build. I think one of the cool things is like the progression of ape society is like where you would think they would be. It's not like they have like advanced technology or anything out of nowhere. Like, that's the evolution. Like, okay, 10 years down the road, this is a logical step for where apes are. Like, it's not like all of them are having fully articulated conversations and having tea, but it's like they've advanced to a level where you would expect their civilization to be. But yeah, let's go ahead and let's jump into our general thoughts for War for the Planet of the Apes. Jake, how did you feel about this film?
So my first thought is those poor horses that had to carry the gorillas. I don't know why, but like, I could not stop thinking about that in the horse riding scenes. I was like, why is there a gorilla on a horse? But besides that, I liked this movie. Andy Serkis is one of the greatest and most underappreciated actors of his generation. I mean, what he has done for filmmaking is literally game changing. Like, this man needs an Oscar, and this performance, what he does with chimpanzee, like, I mean, it's just, it's insane what he brings to the table, the level of depth of the performance that he's able to give. this movie was good. For me, the plot was a little weak, a little cheesy, a little predictable. There's a lot of like logic things that if you start to pull that string, some things kind of start to unravel. But once again, for me, this film is negatively affected by its marketing campaign. Like, I was expecting something very different than the film we were given. I was expecting like a Lord of the Rings style battle between humans and apes. Like, the poster is literally a standoff of apes on horses with spears against like a human army. And so that's what I was expecting. Instead, well, we got like The Great Escape, and it's still good. It's still a great movie. And I think by doing what they did, they're able to comment a lot about humanity and how inhumane we are. And it helps the characters by making it that kind of film versus a giant battle film. But if you're going to do that, then don't market it as a giant battle film, you know? So yeah,
part of that's in the title.
Yeah.
Like, they named it War, so they had, like, they marketed it as the character, because it's so much more of like a character piece than it is a war film.
Yeah,
definitely. I don't know if they'd have the same interest, but yeah, I agree with you. I think that's a misstep. Trevor, where are you at with this movie?
Whoa. Okay, I'm going to hop in here for a second. This is Jake from the world of editing. Unfortunately, Trevor let a pretty major spoiler slip in his initial thoughts. He's been gone for a while, so we're going to let this one slide, but Trevor, you need to shape up. Chip, chop, chip, my friend. But anyways, just to give you our overall thoughts really quick, this film was great. Really recommend it. This whole trilogy is great, in fact. Please go see this movie. It's one of the best films of the year. And yeah, so now the review is in spoilers. So if you have not seen this movie, go see it and then come back and finish the episode. We are now in spoilers. Okay, enjoy the rest of the show.
I liked this movie a lot. I think I liked it a little bit better than Dawn, maybe. I think that it is definitely like a prison escape movie disguised as a war movie. And I think the interesting thing about what they did with the war and the climax, this is the only one of the three that doesn't have like a climactic battle at the end. It does have a battle, but it's between people that we just saw for the battle. Our protagonist and our antagonist don't have the battle. And I think that serves the story really well of how it's the humans defeating themselves and not the apes defeating the humans for supremacy, with the colonel succumbing to the virus and everything. Oops, spoilers.
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 We're going to have to, whoops, okay.
Anyway,
I thought this was good. I thought that it expanded on the moral complexities, which I think are the strength of this franchise. The ideas of like, when is it okay to kill? Who is the dominant species? Can there be more than one dominant species? Do we or whoever have a responsibility inherently to ensure the survival of our own kind at the expense of other kinds, at any cost, at all costs? The idea of killing some to save even more. We see that in the first couple movies, and we see that even more in this one. On the small level of Caesar killing Koba, the much bigger level of the colonel's men being threatened for what they do and what they believe. I think it's really interesting. I like it. I enjoyed it overall. I think that it was long, but not too long. And I think it works.
Yeah. Good thoughts. I'm with you. For a blockbuster movie, this has way more moral complexities than I think even Dawn had. I can't express how big of a fan or how in I am on Andy Serkis. He's an honorable mensch in my opinion, which is the list of people that I think like I'll go see anything of theirs. Like, Andy Serkis is in something, I'm like, I'm in. What is it? I'm in. I don't care. Andy Serkis is in it. I so hope that he gets a Best Actor nomination for this, because I think that he really deserves it. More so just for what he's done with this series as a whole. And I hope that he gets the respect and love that he deserves for this, because what he did in these movies is no small feat. And the way that he brings this character to life is so rich, has so much depth, and it's so well done just in his physical performance. Like, so little of what he does with Caesar isn't actually what he says, but it's what he does. And this movie really, yeah, for a lot of it, is a silent film. Like, there is not a whole lot of dialogue. And I think that's incredibly powerful. I think that this movie does the opposite of what so many third films in a trilogy do, which, you know, they try and go big with that third film. And really, like, 2/3 of this movie takes place in a single base. And it's an incredibly, like, well-contained film in how it's put together. I think that there's a couple issues with pacing, and it could have been a little bit tighter. But I think the additions to the cast, and Woody Harrelson, who's amazing. I mean, he's just fantastic in this movie, and love him. I think it's the first time I've ever said this, but I was incredibly happy that Steve Zahn was in this movie. His bad ape character is just so, like, he brings this, like, lightness at a time when you need it. But it also is, like, it's one of those things you laugh at, but at the same time you're like, oh, that's kind of sad that he's that way. Like, that he's been mentally abused or tortured to the point where he handles things in the way that he does, or the fact that he's out in the woods by himself for all this time. But I think that's part of that is just in, we have so much emotional attachment to Caesar that then transfers over to everyone around him. And I think it's an incredibly powerful film. I was very happy with how they decided to end this trilogy. For me, it's the second. I think Dawn's the best in the series. But I think this is pretty close. So, yeah, do you guys have any... I mean, the majority of what I want to talk about this movie is pretty spoilery. So are there any other general thoughts that you guys want to get out there?
I mean, I'll say... It is,
Trevor, go ahead.
Okay. It is kind of slow, but I feel like it's pretty deliberate in its pacing. I don't know that it lingers too long on anything. There's maybe a few things that could have made it a little bit tighter, but I think that it's pretty deliberate. I know you kind of touched on this, Cam, but I'm impressed at how intimate this film is, despite the scale of it being like the fate of human existence for the most part. But it really is just, it's about, like, basically this movie is about two characters, and it's about their standoff for the whole time. And
yeah.
And the way that Matt Reeves is able to kind of frame that and tell that story, I think is pretty impressive considering how intimate the film is based on its overall scope.
Yeah,
I agree. I just want to reiterate what you said, Cameron, of Andy Serkis's physical performance. I mean, he says maybe 100 words in this movie. I mean,
but you feel each of those words.
You feel each word, but you literally feel every second of his presence on screen. What he's doing physically is absurd. They went through a 6-month training program of how to just be an ape, like the physical presence of an ape, and what he's able to do with his facial emotions. And the scene where, I guess we're already in spoilers because Trevor put us there.
Spoilers, guys! If you haven't seen this, go see it.
A little tag or an announcement on this podcast.
I'll add an insert, a little insert announcement. The scene where the little girl comes over to his, like, cage, his prison, and is talking to him with sign language, feeding him, and then, like, the apes are reacting to him and telling him that he's still their leader, like, his facial like, I'm getting chills just thinking about it. I mean, that scene is amazing. And I can,
how good was that?
I kept forgetting that they weren't apes. Like, those were people. What?
I will say, like, there are so many times in this movie that, like, I caught myself fully invested, and for a second I'd, like, step back and be like, whoa, this is a movie. Like, I'm not, like, I think that's what the best movies do, is they draw you in so much that you forget that you're watching a movie and you feel like you're actually there. But man, how good was that twist of the fact that the girl's doll is what then ends up giving Woody Harrelson the disease?
Oh yeah.
That was such a perfect little plant. Very It Comes yes. at Night.
It was very It Comes at Nighty.
No, but that was great. Like, the moment they panned down to the doll, I was like, I literally said, out loud. I was like,
Oh, there are so many, like, I had so many, like, physical verbal reactions during this movie. Like, the scene where Caesar yells, stop, as they're whipping the chimpanzee.
Oh, man.
I was just like, oh, no. Oh. Because I was just like, I was ready for something bad to happen. And then even right after that, where they, all the apes, like, stop working. And I was ready for them to just, like, they're going to do something terrible to the rest of the apes. And it was, like, this movie evoked physical, like, oh, no. Like, I was so invested that I was physically, like, grimacing, like, cringing, because I was not ready for what was about to happen.
This movie really made me hate humans, which is unfortunate, because I am a human, surprise. So,
hello, my name is Jake, that's and good. I'm a human.
In that way, it's sort of like the good version of Avatar.
Yes. Oh, man. That's very good.
Or you
good.
Mean
that's,
like that's another version of Avatar, because Avatar is good.
You
know what?
You.
Another underrated film, Avatar.
No. Overrated. It was nominated for Best Picture. What the hell was the Academy doing? That movie is garbage. And I will stand by that.
We're going to do a review of Avatar at some point, because I think we all have a lot to talk about with that movie.
All right. That's a conversation for another friend. But anyways.
There we go. Work it in there.
Yes.
So. Yeah, I was... There were, I think, like, so the scene where Luca, who is the ape that's with Caesar for most of the beginning of the film, when he dies, that was another moment that I, like, let out a physical, like, gasp of, like, oh, like, oh, no, like, I was, and then
that
the little girl
so
crying
fast.
Over him. Yeah. Oh, but, like, and that's part of my issue with the pacing, is that, like, it ramps up quickly and then, like, just sits, and it gives us the time to breathe, but doesn't, like, it happens so quick that, like, so there's so many moments in this film that happen so quick that you're like, wait, what, like, we don't have time to, they give us time to process in the slow moments, but they don't give us time to realize what's happening in the fast moments. And I'm curious if on repeat viewings, if that's something that I won't have as much of a problem with.
Uh-huh.
But the first time through, there were times that I found myself thinking about what had just happened instead of staying invested in what was on screen.
I think that's probably intentional in the way that they're trying to reflect that this is like a war / bat, like things just come out of nowhere and leave out of nowhere. And then you have this emptiness of like, what the hell just happened? This guy's dead. And so I might be giving the filmmakers too much credit on that. Maybe that wasn't intentional and it is just bad pacing here and there. But I think it reflects what's happening.
Yeah. No, Jake, and you brought up a good point of like giving filmmakers credit. And I want to clarify something, because I think this is a very interesting topic that you've hit on, is there is a certain point in a director's career where they've put out enough good things that you're like, okay, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt on things. And then there are certain times where directors have let you down so many times that you're like, okay, I'm going to not give them the benefit of the doubt on this. And I think Matt Reeves has reached a point where with things like that, we can give him the benefit of the doubt if he knows what he's doing and that probably is intentional in what he's going for.
Yeah, and I think it aids the character in that situation, because for us, it was such a split like second thing that happened. And so in the character's perspective, like the moment danger presented itself, Luca jumped in front of Caesar. You know, there was literally no thought about it. And was willing to lay down his life. And so I think that goes to the situation itself, and it aids in the character of Luca and makes us feel emotionally invested in him.
Yeah. One of the other things that was, I'm not quite sure how I feel about. I think it was handled well at first, and then I think as the movie went on, they kind of dropped it. But it was Caesar killing Winter, and the immediate aftermath of that is handled like perfectly. Like they bring back Koba of like apes don't kill apes. But then I like they bring back Koba kind of later in the movie, but I feel like it's such a thing that's just kind of like dropped this idea of like how much that haunts him. And I don't know if that's just a comment on like the rage inside of him and how much he's like, so once again, spoilers, what happened, like in the first third, his son Blue Eyes, who we've seen in the previous film, and his wife, Cornelia, played by Judy Greer.
Yeah.
They're both killed by Woody Harrelson's character because he thinks that Blue Eyes is Caesar and shoots both of them in his cave and kind of just sends Caesar on this blind rage mission, which kind of kicks off the rest of the movie. But I felt like that was something that was, I don't know, you guys can tell me if I'm wrong. I felt like that was something that was like such a great, like a little idea of like Caesar's crossed this line for his family. And then it's kind of dropped and not brought up again. Like it's brought up in the sense of like how, what would you do for your family? But it's not like brought up in terms of like the moral issue of like breaking one of your big rules.
I mean, I think part of killing Winter was out of necessity based on where they were. But then also
I don't think he meant to kill Winter.
Do what?
Yeah. It was definitely an accident.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, okay. I didn't even really think about it even that way. I just thought it was a necessity thing to keep everything quiet. But
well, he was trying to like choke him out, like keep him quiet. But then he was like squeezing too hard.
Okay, but I guess what I'm about to say still works. I think that is the moment when he begins to question this quest for revenge. I think that's kind of the catalyst that changes his thinking. It doesn't change it entirely. We don't see the full formation of that until really until he has the chance to kill the colonel and doesn't. And we see the kind of build up to that, but I think that is a really kind of a cleverly crafted moment to begin the change in the character.
Yeah. I liked it because as Trevor said earlier, about, I don't know if it was about this. No, it was about the last couple of films. There's gray area on both sides of the ape side and the human side. While Woody Harrelson is kind of, not kind of, insane. He's insane. He's able to justify it in a way that if you look at it from his perspective, like it totally makes sense what he's doing. Even though it's on the edge of sanity, he's doing what he thinks is right to save humanity. And, you know, it's the same thing for Caesar. You know, he says apes strong together, apes do not kill apes, but when it comes down to it, I mean, he's having to make really, really tough decisions to save himself and his family. And so he's kind of riding that moral line of, it's almost like Luke Skywalker and like the Force, you know, like use a little bit of the dark side, use a little bit of the light side, but you know, it's like, I'm just going to try and stay in the middle. And so I think that makes the character more relatable.
Yeah, and I think that that's one of the big strengths of the film is that everything is in this moral gray area. Like, obviously, Caesar is a little bit more, like, leaning towards the light, but he's still kind of in this gray area. You understand where the Colonel, Woody Harrelson's character, is, but he's painted as a villain, so he's a little bit more along the darkness. But that moral grayness is where this movie succeeds so well, is that it doesn't just paint in broad strokes, it's these obscure lines of, okay, what is right and what is wrong and who is good and who, I mean, they even bring that in on the human side. Who's like, is Woody Harrelson doing what's right? Is the rest of the military doing what's right? But yeah, I think that that's a huge strength of this movie is how it paints those situations.
Yeah. I personally, I don't know about you guys, I loved the concept of the traitor apes working for the humans.
Yes. That was really clever.
Where the where the hand like reaches and grabs the guy, you think it's like, oh, the ape's behind him, but then he like hands him binoculars or something.
That was great.
So good, so well done. And like through that, this film is able to comment on so many things that's going on in our society or has happened in our society, like slavery, racism, like humanity itself, like if our intelligence is actually a benefit or a negative, so many other things. But like the specifically the donkeys, that was like that was really well done and very powerful.
Such a great like logical step for the supporters of Koba to make.
Yeah, like you're not gonna just go back. I didn't even think about that. And when they brought that up, I was like, holy crap, that's so good.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. And that's such a like, I think what it was is it wasn't even like they joined military forces and then all of a sudden they're like looked at as heroes. They're joined military forces and they're still dirt.
Mm-hmm.
And that's such an interesting way to present that side of it. I have to say, my favorite character, once again, was Maurice the orangutan.
Maurice is the best.
The detail on Maurice's face in some of those close-ups is insane.
His eyes.
Yes. Like,
it's mine. Yeah, the eyes. And I don't know, like, I don't know if you guys felt this way. There felt like there was something different with the eyes of the apes in this movie. Like, I don't know if it was just a natural progression, but they felt... their eyes felt even more human-like. I don't know if that's just how they've built the story, but did you guys think that?
I think that might just be progression of technology and motion capture. I mean, it probably also is something to do with the story because directors are crazy and think about every single detail like that. but the texture, like this is some of the best like skin texture and hair texture I've ever seen. If this is not nominated for the best visual effects, I mean, that's a crime. This should win. Like this is hands down the best VFX I've seen this year because you don't think it's VFX. Like you just totally look past it as if like, yep, this is an ape on screen versus like Valerian that's coming out where it's literally just like video game, the movie. You know, this is just so, so good. So authentic.
Yep.
Yeah. I would highly encourage people to go look up behind the scenes pictures from this movie or go look up behind the scenes footage from Dawn of the Planet of the Apes where they show the transformation of characters to the animals that they're playing. And it's just what they're able to do nowadays with that technology is amazing.
Real quick, did you guys like the score? I personally hated the score of this film.
I thought it was fine. It didn't quite always do what it needed to do, I don't think.
I liked it, but I like all of Giacchino's work. I think that the way that he composes things is like musically in line with what I like. And I've been a big fan of his since like since back during the Lost days. And so I was kind of on board just with him in general. I don't know if I was blinded by that or not. I listened to it recently after the movie and I thought it was good, but I'm not as musically inclined as you guys are. So I will leave that up to you guys.
Yeah. There were just sometimes where what was happening musically just didn't really feel like it matched, and so it was like taking me out of the situation. Or like, we're with a bunch of apes, why is there a giant orchestra playing? Like, why isn't there more like, you know, primal sounds happening? I don't know. One last thought. So how biblical was this movie?
Yeah, I was gonna bring that up. I was gonna say I did not come up with this originally. I saw people talking about it on Twitter. But there's a lot of Exodus going on here.
Yeah, literally. Yes. So I work at a church. I'm a filmmaker at a church, and me and a guy that I work with, we went to go see this film right after work, and literally the moment the credits rolled, we both were like, "Well, that was the story of Exodus. That's basically all that was."
It was
which I mean it was really good.
Super.
It's the best Christian movie
close.
Since Book of Eli.
So true.
Yeah, that may not be too far of a stretch.
Yeah, but I really liked it. I haven't seen the originals, but I know that like Caesar is held as this deity figure to the apes, and this film and the last film really rounds that out in kind of like a really ironic way by carrying the story of like Cain and Abel and Moses and even like a little bit of Jesus into an ape to then establish the ape religion.
He's like, but almost, like, okay, like, so if you like go faux crucified at one point,
and
but
like
even if you go Moses, like he was adopted and grew up in an,
and he like, killed his brother Koba in the last film. Like, I mean, this is straight up Old Testament / New Testament for the apes. Like, and that's why Caesar becomes a deity like figure in the later films.
But he doesn't get to enter the promised land because of his sins.
Just like Moses.
Just like Moses.
Yeah. And that brings us to the end of the movie. I shed a couple tears when I realized that Caesar wasn't going to make it. Were you guys in the same boat? Were you guys like, what were your guys' thoughts on the ending?
So for me, I think that's exactly what needed to happen. You know, what the interaction between Maurice and Caesar is so emotional, but so simple. It says so much without saying really anything, except for the end, which makes it even more powerful. But like these Caesar's story arc had ended, and he had finished his journey. He had come to the end of the hero's journey. It was time for him to pass the torch on to the next generation. I'm glad they ended it where they did, because it just is like the perfect bow on top. Trevor, what about you?
I completely agree. This is the only way that it could end. Even from the way that this journey has weighed on Caesar, where we know that he's the leader, but he's always been the leader out of a sense of duty, not out of a sense of feeling like he deserved to be the leader or anything like that. He was the leader because he needed to be the leader, and they needed him to be the leader. And now they don't. And not that his usefulness has run out or anything, but his purpose has been fulfilled. He, like you said, he's finished his journey. He's done what he needed to do. And there wasn't, you could say it's a little dramatic, but I mean, this was a perfect ending for him.
It really was. Yeah. And like Caesar was the savior character, which relates to Moses and a lot of other things. And Maurice, they kind of hint at it and point at it. He's the person that like you want to build a society on, or he's the ape that you want to build a society on. And
he's the teacher, he's the reader, he's the thinker.
Exactly. Yeah. So it was time for Caesar to pass the torch, and the character had served its purpose of freeing the Jews from the Egyptians and taking them to the promised land.
Yeah, I think it was a perfect ending. And so they originally had said that they wanted to make 5 or 6 of these, and that they had stories plotted out for 5 or 6. I don't know if that still holds true, but I'm
cool with that, as long as we jump ahead in time a little bit, kind of more between these and the originals. We don't need to continue this part of the saga.
No, not at all. But my question is, I don't know how interested I am in these movies if Andy Serkis isn't the lead. Now, with CGI, he could play the lead and be fine. But if Andy Serkis is in this, where's your guys' interest on a sequel if he's not in this?
I'm still super interested because these first three films have done such a good job. I mean, I'm in on this franchise. I really want to go back and watch the other films, even though they are kind of like B-level films, essentially, at least the sequels are to the original. I really like this world, and I'm excited to see where it goes. And just the premise of apes starting to build a society and technology and stuff like that is really interesting to me for some reason. So I'm in. If Andy Serkis does play like a grown up Cornelius or something, then I'm like super in. But yeah, I'm in on these no matter really what they do.
Yeah, I'm interested as well. I think we need, like I said, space in the story. I think we also need a little bit of like actual time space. Like this, there's no reason the next movie needs to come out before like 5 years from now. I think that yeah. Franchise fatigue is a real thing. And I think especially after the way they've tied up this set of films so nicely in this 6 year period, I think that we need some time, and they needed some time to make sure they get it right.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I don't know how much of a reality it is in them waiting. I think we now are getting into the interesting idea of when do you let a franchise go. And the unfortunate thing is that as a studio and as a business, they're looking at this and going, wow, we're making pretty good money off this. Okay, where can we go next? And I don't see them not making another one of these. And so my bigger thought is, what's the best version of these that they can do going forward? And obviously it's not going to be with Caesar, but I'm curious to see where they go. I'd agree they need a time jump. But yeah, my interest, if Matt Reeves, who's going to be occupied making the Batman, or Andy Serkis, who's making his directorial debut, doing his own version of the Jungle Book. If they're not in this, I don't know where my interest, how high of an interest I actually have in this movie.
It's fair.
But yeah, let's wrap this up and give this movie a rating. Jake, what do you rate this movie?
So I would rate this film at an A-. It's definitely not perfect, and there's a lot of things that I think they could have done better, make it a little tighter, maybe a less kind of like stereotypical escape revenge plot. But this is the perfect way to end the series, especially with the character of Caesar and with Andy Serkis's performance alone. I mean, that makes it like an A for me. So I'm going to say A-. I still think I like Dawn better than this film. I need to rewatch both, though, to make that decision. But this is one of the best films of the year by far. So I'm really high on this movie. Really, really liked it. It's just not quite where I wanted it to be, so A-. Trevor, what about you?
All right, I'm probably gonna slot this in. It played my third favorite film of the year behind Wonder Woman and Baby Driver in some order. I'm gonna give it a 4 out of 5. I think it's very good. I think there are some, as you mentioned, Jake, a few plot holes if you really start digging. No pun intended. That are kind of iffy. But I think this movie is more about its themes than it is about its story, and in some ways, and I think that those come across in a very real and powerful way. So I'd say 4 out of 5. Definitely much better than you might expect a movie with this short blurb of a description to be.
Yeah. I'm gonna give it an A. It's definitely top 5 movie of the year. I think it's below Spider-Man Homecoming and Baby Driver. It's like just above Wonder Woman and Lego Batman Movie, but like right at Lego Batman Movie. But it's, yeah, it's a good movie. It's a great way to wrap up the series. And like we've all said, Andy Serkis is just phenomenal. Like, I'll watch him play Caesar all day long. So that's all we have for War for the Planet of the Apes. Let's get into our content of the week. Jake, what content are you recommending this week?
So I have been watching, or I actually just finished, the HBO documentary series called The Defiant Ones. And if you have HBO, you have to watch this. And if you don't have HBO, I would really recommend getting the free month trial to watch this. This is a documentary series about the story of legendary music producers Jimmy Iovine and Dr. Dre. and how those two have single-handedly revolutionized the music industry, not only from the artist perspective or the producer perspective, but also the hardware perspective via Beats by Dr. Dre, and then selling it to Apple for $3.2 billion. Both of them came out of essentially the slums and went to billionaire status and worked with literally every artist that has defined our generations. And it's really well done. It's 4 hour long episodes. Super well done. Really, really enjoyed it. It's the Defiant Ones on HBO. Trevor, what about you?
Mine we've already mentioned in this podcast, and it is the book A Wrinkle in Time. It's really good, really original, some great sci-fi ideas. If you like sci-fi, it's a little bit more accessible, I think. Kind of like C.S. Lewis meets sci-fi in some ways. It's really cheap. You can probably find it at a used bookstore, definitely at the library, $5 on Amazon or something. But I'd really recommend a book, The Wrinkle in Time, so that way everybody can get as excited as we are about the movie coming.
Good recommend. Okay, I watched Get Out earlier this week with my wife, and it was fantastic. I can't say enough positive things about Jordan Peele's directorial debut. Jordan Peele, obviously known for the very famous sketch comedy duo Key and Peele. But it's so entertaining just how he crafts the story and the journey that he takes you on. And I'm really excited to see what Jordan Peele does next. I think he has a pretty unique viewpoint and storytelling perspective. And I like that he's, with his next movie, he already has turned down a couple big budget films and is trying to stay with a smaller film and tell stories that he wants to tell. And I think that's exactly where he should be. Get Out, another film from earlier this year. That is all we have for this week. Episode 12 is all done. If you have enjoyed listening to us, please go to iTunes, subscribe, rate us, and share this podcast with your friends and family. We would love for you to rate us, and we would love for you to share share this content. If you want to hear more of our episodes, you can go to iTunes, or you can go to our website at popcornoptional.com. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook by just searching Popcorn Optional. My name is Cameron Salina. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at 321CamieTime. Jake, where can we find you online?
You can find me at jakebrown.tv. Trevor?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at TurboTrevor. If you want some sweet pics of the national parks in Utah, check out that Instagram.
Nice. Alrighty, well, we have loved getting to talk movies with you guys tonight, and we'll be back next week to talk either Dunkirk or Valerian. I have a pick which one I'm leaning towards. Do you guys have a preference?
Dunkirk.
Yeah, I like Christopher Nolan okay. I think he's pretty good.
Yeah, I've heard good things about Dunkirk, so let's go ahead and say that we will be back next week talking Dunkirk with you guys. We hope you have a great week, and until next time, we will see you next time.
Bye.
See ya.